Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby make it hot. Buy the cop so you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yo, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee yo.
And we're back once again. Well, I'm back. Here he is. Hold on. Dialing in.
I'm right here.
There you are. Did you get to hear the thingy?
Absolutely not.
Well, would you like to hear it?
You know what? I think I would.
Okay.
I've had that kind of day. I know the fans of the show are used to this, but...
here we go.
I was delayed.
I know. Hold on.
Let's boogie.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee.
There you go. Feel better?
All right. There you go. All right. I'm stepping into it here.
All right. Well, that's good. We should have an interesting show tonight.
I think you're being a little optimistic, but go ahead.
Well, yeah. We have a good guest tonight. Hopefully she won't forget. I did send a reminder, so...
Oh, well, hopefully she won't forget. Well, that is interesting.
I'm sure she'll be here.
Okay, 50-50 on the guest.
I sent a reminder. I like to send the reminders out because I, too, have forgotten that I was supposed to be on other people's shows, so it can happen.
Yeah, actually, to do a little preview, tomorrow we're going to be on the Paranormal Extraordinary, whatever they call it, show. The what is it, the League of Extraordinary Women or something like that, or Paranormal Women?
Yes.
That's right. It's on your Blog Talk dial. We'll be on from 8 to 9. I think the show goes from 8 to 10.
Right.
Talking dreams.
Mm-hmm. A little dream interpretation. It should be good.
Getting into some brain stuff, probably. You know, getting a little weird on you, on your somatic butts.
Yeah, we never do anything weird.
No, it's only 9:04, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so much news, I can't even, my head can't, swivel anymore. Earthquakes and cyclones and John Edwards and, geez.
Yeah.
What do you do? I mean, I'm at the point now with this whole Hillary thing where she just won't go away. She's just literally...
She's got herpes.
She is so defiant and so delusional, and people, I don't know, if you're close to her, do you get out an abacus? I mean, what do you do to explain to this ferocious ontosaurus she ain't going to win?
No.
You
she'll
know.
Never accept it.
It'll be like next July she'll still be campaigning. I'm if elected in 2012.
Yeah.
I think she said she's going to do a 60-month campaign and just keep going for another 4 years from here.
Yeah, I can't wait to continue to see her mug on my TV.
Well, you know she's going to slither out from under a rock in 4 years and a rock, oddly, and run again. She's going to be like the Pat Paulson of the... 21st century. I'm going to run and run until I win. She thinks it's American Idol. You just keep coming back, you know. Meanwhile, that show's completely dropped short. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
That show's completely falling apart. But they can't even get the two other dudes to stop whining long enough because Paul is having another breakdown. And then she just won't get up and just walk away. Like, it's enough. We're done. You talentless bunch of freaking cackling ninnies.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, we're going to be examining the use of the F word in today's show.
Yay!
So you got the Earl Weaver thing handy?
You know what? Which was that? The last one that you sent me?
Yeah.
I didn't get that one uploaded because I lost the link, but we can play it live.
You just play it.
Well, I got to get the link. You got the link there? You could play
link.
It then.
I got no link.
What do you mean you got no link?
I'm not even looking at my computer. I'd rather kick it than look at it.
Hold on. Let me find it because I was trying to remember his name. It was not coming to me. Hold on a second. I will find him.
It's in the email I sent you.
No, it was in an IM, I think.
It was
oh, wait
in an
a minute.
Email.
It was in an email.
Because yeah, I couldn't stop laughing.
There's so many of these.
I had basically just, you know, snot bubbles come out of my nose. I was laughing so hard.
Yes, actually.
And I'd heard it before. I'd heard it like 10 years ago.
I'm going to check the mail. It'll be easier to do that
so
way.
You're so slow.
Here, I got it. Listen,
all
shut
right.
your pie hole, boy.
Go ahead.
All right. Here we go. Let's see. Let's make sure we can hear it here. Loading. Oh, you know what? What would be really good?
Have I put
my
volume
speaker?
On?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Earl Weaver, ladies and gentlemen, setting the tone for the evening.
Now, the manager's corner, with the thoughts and opinions of the American League's winningest manager, the Orioles' Earl Weaver. And now, to the manager's corner with Earl Weaver.
Bill Whitehouse, Earl, from Frederick, Maryland, wants to know why you and the Orioles don't go out and get some more team speed.
Team speed, for Christ's sake. You get fucking goddamn little fleas on the fucking bases, getting picked off, trying to steal, getting thrown out, taking runs away from you. You get them big cocksuckers that can hit the fucking ball out of the ballpark, and you can't make any goddamn mistake.
Well, certainly this show is going to go down in history, Earl. Terry Elliott of Washington, D.C., wants to know why you don't use Terry Crowley as a designated hitter all the time.
Well, Terry Crowley's lucky he's in fucking baseball, for Christ's sake. He was released by the Cincinnati Reds. He was released by the fucking goddamn Atlanta Braves. We saw that Terry Crowley could sit on his fucking ass for 8 innings and enjoy watching a baseball game just like any other fan, and has the ability to get up there and break one open in the fucking ninth. So if this cocksucker could mind his own business and let me manage the fucking team, we'd be a lot better off.
Well, certainly you've made your opinions known on the fans' questions about baseball, Earl, but let's get to something else. Alice Sweet from Norfolk wants to know the best time to put in a tomato plant.
Alice Sweet ought to be worried about where the fuck her next lady's coming from, rather than where her next goddamn tomato plant's coming from. If she'd get her ass out of fucking bars at night and go hustling around the goddamn street, she might get a prick stuck in her once in a while. I don't understand where these questions are coming from, Tom. That's about it for Manager's Corner. Go fuck yourself, and the fuck with your show coming up next on the Baltimore Oriole Baseball fucking network.
There you go, setting the tone here, a little baseball humor.
Oh, God.
You can't make it up. The tomato plant question was when I lost it.
So tell me, what's his domain?
Yeah, you have to really fish for that one, don't you?
Oh, God, that was funny. Oh, I don't know what's funnier.
Well, there's a lot we're going to be looking at later, but that sets the tone. You know, people don't like to see when the mask comes off what's really, you know, behind the mask, and Earl never put one on, so...
No.
I love the way he ended that interview. That was the best part of it.
He sounded like Fitzy.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what made me just lose it.
Yep.
just hilarious.
Oh...
But anyway, it's like there's been a lot of slip-ups and faux pas making their way onto the YouTube in the last couple of days, and that one comes from the archives. It just sort of speaks to the this sort of a veneer that it's somehow that, you know, curse words are somehow what's the word for the curse word that they have some type of magic. That when you hear them, like your life becomes less pure or something like that. When they have no meaning other than the meaning we give them, but that they have this quality of being obscene. That
well,
I'm
you
most
know,
fascinated with
the F word. Anne Marie always said that there's, if you're looking at it from her point of view, she's a speech language pathologist.
Mm-hmm.
That it does actually give you a really good release. So it's a very therapeutic word.
Yes. Well, you know, the origin of it is, you know, with the whole plucking of the finger thing. When they used to fight with the arrows and they'd cut their middle fingers off, and then they would mock them by putting the middle finger up.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Very warm.
Well, you know, we were so civil back, upstream. Humanity's become so much more, Puritan in the last 100 years. We have no clue. We have no clue how we couldn't have survived even 60, 70 years ago.
Probably not.
As far as the way the world turns. I mean, right now, of course, you know, you're running for your life.
Yeah.
So, you know. So this this guest of yours, she's supposed to call in about now.
Yep.
So we'll just vamp until she shows up. Why don't we play one of the Philo one that we've heard before, the Acostas. This is a Philo using
just,
the F word. Oh, wait a minute. Nope. We'll have to hold off on that to the end of the show.
Yeah, you guys will have to wait. But we will have to end a little early because we have some other stuff we got to do. So.
Yeah, okay, fine. You run the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. I'm running everything here.
All right, get the horn.
All right, I'll get the horn. You get the guest. And
how do you pronounce her name, though?
Karen.
Yeah, thanks.
Well,
I guess she's gonna tell us here in a minute. You activate her situation here?
No, you activate her. Let me just find
you
this.
Make me do this work.
Listen.
All right, you get the horn.
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
Yes, I'm gonna get the horn.
All right.
If I can get my mouse to work.
Your mouth or your mouse?
Well, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
All right, the Summer Submarine leaves port this week with, the whole black thing just went bazillion.
Oh, it did, though. Are you here, Karen?
Yes.
Yay!
Yes, okay. All
right, we didn't lose you because we just lost our
All right, the president and founder of the Institute of Self-Discovery, Karen DeLandes.
Deslandes.
I was close.
So you just say it the way it looks.
I said it with a little French accent because I got a little hockey in the brain, sorry.
That was very sexy.
It actually is French, but that's how people say it, so that's how I say it.
I hear you.
Okay, well, she goes with the flow.
Yep.
All right, and where is this? Does this thing just exist in the sky, or does it have a bricks and mortar side of it too?
Are you talking about the Institute of Self-Discovery?
Yeah, the Institute of Self-Discovery.
It's actually a consultant-based practice, so I actually reside in Pennsylvania. I don't have a bricks and mortar building, no.
Okay. And your program, is it more corporate? Is it more kind of a community-based thing, or how does it work?
It would be more, it's really geared towards women and the issues of self-esteem, assertiveness training,
mm-hmm.
things along those lines. It's all about building the self-image of women. That's our primary focus. And then I think by virtue of building the self-esteem of women, it helps to affect families, which is an overall focus.
I don't know about you, but I just don't see women having a problem being assertive. I just always have the other, it's the opposite. It's getting the shut up, but you can't tell them anything these days. I mean, the only last night, there's an example. She really needs to work on the assertiveness thing, doesn't she?
Hillary?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would she be a model for you as a woman with good self-esteem as far as the way you guys look at things? Just as a curiosity, being a man? And I'm hiding under the desk as I wait for the answer?
it's really about women coming up out of a mold that they have to be at like everyone else, just finding what their true passion and purpose is in life and just pursuing that without really worrying about what other people think or fitting into a mold, so to speak, of what they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And just pursuing their passion. So it's just a healthy self-image so that you can go on and live a positive life.
So do you think, we've had other guests on the show, like I'm thinking of Sassy and some of the other guests we've had, that talk about how women have been given mixed messages and they've got difficulty understanding, you know, like their connection even to their own father, things like that. So where do you think that the glitch is on a cultural basis that makes a lot of women basically grow up with a distorted or a kind of a messed up self-image?
Well, I think some of it is, we're taught as little girls that, you know, to be more, well, most of us are taught, I'm not going to say everyone, but most of us are taught to be pretty docile, pretty quiet, don't upset the program. We're not taught to have that more assertive nature as boys are taught. And then as you start getting out into the world, you find that maybe that more quiet, you know, laid to the back type image doesn't really help you when you want to go after things. And then we get a bad rap on the other end because when the women are aggressive, they get known as that other word.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like there's mixed messages. And so
mm-hmm.
when you have a healthy, I think when you learn to like sort through all of that, some of the messages that while they were good intention might not, you know, serve us in pursuing our purpose as we get older. I think as you just dig through that and come out with who you are as a person, you can just move on without being tied to what you might have necessarily been taught was proper behavior for a young lady.
Now, Professor Val is a school psychologist, so I'm going to take a seat on the couch here and just let you guys fight it out. Where do you
no
think...
fight. I agree with her.
Well, but no, discuss.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Look at these freaking Mets.
Oh,
wait, anyway,
stop with the Mets.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, he was safe at the plate, I guess. Anyway, as I was saying, where do the women, do you think, when they're girls at this point, where are they getting this message from about being docile and being sort of subservient? Is it coming from their parents? Is it coming from the teachers?
You know, even
is it something that's implicit or something that's overt that they go, you must sit and be quiet and be a good girl?
Even
a
baby
infant. They tell the boys to shut up, too.
Even a baby infant a girl infant is treated differently than a boy infant. The girl infants are, you know, held and, oh, it's so cute and all that crap. And the little boy infants, so you'll be a little bit more physically rough with them.
Right.
You know, you throw them around a little bit. You know, that's my boy and all that stuff. I mean, it happens that young. It even happens before now that we can tell if we're having a boy or a girl ahead of time.
So
that
how do you guys,
that kid's in trouble.
This is getting me really, I'm on the edge of my seat here. This is getting me like, get the popcorn out. So how do you deal with the fact that individually you might have the tomboy, and you might have the metrosexual male, you know, that are kind of like androgynous in a way, and they're getting the same message that the standard operating, you know, American boy and girl would get. You know, so it seems like if the general idea is the women are kind of hosed into believing that they should supposed to be secondary, you know, in every situation and sort of like, you know, lowercase citizens, and the dudes are told that they're going to be president someday, and everyone thinks that they're great. I don't know. I don't remember anyone telling me I did anything right when I was growing up. So I just it's a weird dichotomy, I guess, for me to understand. It's like, because if you're saying that the culture doesn't know enough on a general basis of how to raise a healthy child, whether it's male or female, how do we ever know if we're doing it, optimally, if the social model is so warped? And with it, 97% of the families are dysfunctional. So how do we get underneath all this stuff and work with people one on one? How do you guys deal with your work?
Well, for me, like when working with women, I think when the women that I work with, when they themselves develop a healthy image, it helps them then to project that onto their families as they're raising their daughters.
Uh-huh.
I have a niece who is very, she's 5, and she's very, not tomboyish per se, but she's very aggressive. She's very assertive. She likes to work with her hands, get in a rough and tumble, and it was very, you know, difficult for my sister-in-law at first because she wanted her to be more, you know, wear dresses and just be quiet and dainty, but that's not her. So
uh-huh.
It's just let her be who she is. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, and I don't think anyone should judge her, not at 5, because she's just being what comes natural to her.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we try to put everyone into a box, it's what starts making people have unhealthy self-images because now they're not sure who they are. They're just living inside of a box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious mm-hmm. about the contents. If we had to open up this box of healthy self-image, well, what's in the box? I mean, it just seems like the choices are be what the culture expects you to be based on some idealistic standard of, you know, femininity or masculinity or whatever, and then the other extremes that we just mentioned, like a tomboy and the metrosexuals, they're weird, so they're put in another area. It just seems very labelish. To make it so that even the idea of healthy self-image seems sort of kind of like empty to me. Like, what would it consist of? What would the person have? What are the qualities that person has? And Heilman is just killing me here. 2 outs, like 3 hits in a row. how does this guy stay in this freaking league? I'm trashing my XO reliever here. So I'm just getting the idea that, okay, healthy is the target, but What's the steps to get from unhealthy to healthy in terms of content? Like, what do you guys put into the mix that the person would say, okay, well, I've made this distinction and that distinction. Now I feel like I'm moving more towards an authentic way of expressing myself. What are some of the nooks and crannies of this that you guys do?
You want to go? I know there's
no
one else here.
No, you talk.
No, you talk.
No, he knows what I do. I do it in his office.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much.
Our office, by the way.
pretty much we get people to start really examining who they are just at the core. Like, what is it that really moves you? I mean, I've had to go through it. What is it that just moves you to feel like you're really living what's true to yourself, no matter what that is? It's just not being defined by someone else's standards. And still, I mean, not breaking any laws or things like that, but just not being defined by someone else's standards, but just being true to who you feel you were sent here or are meant to be here. That's pretty much how we start the conversation, because I think a lot of how we define ourselves up until a certain point is not really what we think, but it's really what other people think until we start really addressing who we really think we are ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And so people come to your program voluntarily? They come from corporate environments? How do they get involved with you guys?
Mostly it's word of mouth. I have a monthly newsletter, a quarterly newsletter. A lot of it is word of mouth. We also have a woman's group called Sister Network. We have the New Jersey chapter. We meet once a month here in New Jersey, even though I live in Pennsylvania. We meet in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and that's more like a group of professional women. It's just a support group as we all just pursue our various goals. Mm-hmm. And then through that program, word of mouth, when someone's usually when I meet women, it's when they're, I guess you could say, they're at that place in their life where they're really just trying to figure it all out, what they want to do. It might be a transition. Mostly I deal with people who are going through a certain transition and just helping them, you know, navigate through the transition in a positive way. It could be anything. It could be getting married. It could be going through a divorce. It could be changing jobs, moving. Any type of transitional experience where they're just trying to navigate through it and make sure, you know, they're making the right moves according to what it is that they feel is best for their life. So more so, it's more so just coaching people through, no different than a coach for sports.
Mm-hmm.
Just giving them the tools.
I'm trying to get a kind of a bird's eye view of this. If the damage to the self-image is done early, Professor Val is mentioning that even from birth, women are treated, or girls are treated different than boys. And the intervention, your source of providing them information, education, whatever, is hitting them at what age? Is it the early, the younger kids are coming in? Are they teenagers? What's the age range you're dealing with women?
The women I've dealt with have been in their early 30s, late 20s.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
So they're not even attuned. This is something you guys can answer for me that explain me. You're saying that women will hold on to a dysfunctional and limited self-image for 30 years before they think they even have the audacity to get help? I mean, as far as going for a program like this where the whole goal is empowerment? Because I tell you what, we had, I forget her name, top of my head, the Holistic Wisdom safe out there in
Lisa
Colorado.
Wallace?
Perfect name, Lisa Lawless. She was into sexual empowerment for women, and that was a whole different animal to discuss than this. But if you're dealing with women in their late 20s, early 30s, now you're dealing with women that have gone through, their base education. Some of them have gone through college. Maybe some of them have had kids already, and then they're saying, "I don't know who I am, and I got to go, get empowered here." So would you guys? Long term, would you guys think about working with, the teenage market, or are you guys more interested in the workforce age?
No, well, actually, here recently we've been thinking about moving into teenagers. We've been looking at that because we've realized that that's where a lot of the messages happen. So it would be better to start working with the younger group. So we've been looking into some avenues to start going to. Different organizations partner with them to start mm-hmm. that have, like, teens or preteens.
That's good. You can save them 15 or 20 years of agita.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I say. Rather than being, when so many things are so set in and ingrained in us or we've already developed a life around all of that, mm-hmm. unhealthy stuff, it's better to catch it at the pass.
Yeah.
So they can, make healthier decisions as they go into adulthood.
Right, before they get that adult brain, and then it's
Then you're really
bad news.
Picking it out of the wood there.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm trying to get a grip on what it is exactly that the content-wise, when you say you're giving them these programs, are they getting, is it more, because we're into somatics here, so more interested in the bodily response and the nonverbal and the other than conscious side of the coin, not so much what they're going to chirp out of their heads and hold on to in their minds about themselves. So, you know, we've done some programs, you know, about body image, for example. There's a lot of, there's a whole population of women out there, some of them famous on the left coast, that have serious body image problems, and they end up with all kinds of eating disorders and all kinds of drug problems, things like that. That stuff, I mean, I don't know when it started for you guys personally, but it's a pre-teen kind of thing where they start getting into how they look, and then as they go through adolescence, it becomes more and more and more extreme where they get obsessed with it. So at what age do you think the physical part of the self-image becomes the driving force for women in terms of the evolution from just another little girl to daddy's little girl? And then when they turn the corner, they're 10, 11, 12 years old, they get menarche. When do you think it's at the point where you look in the mirror as a female and say, I have to meet a standard that's outside of me, that I have to look a certain way and things like that? What age do you think that kicks in?
Let's see.
I mean, personally for you guys, when did it kick in? When did you look in the mirror and think, like, you got to go fix your hair, you got to go look a certain way before you go outside, can't be seen like this?
I haven't done that yet.
Well, here you go. We don't count you. Your mother started when you were four.
Well, my mother wanted me to be a cheerleader, and she wanted this. My mother was a hairdresser and all of that, and she was so into it. And then me, makeup, maybe a little bit. A dress, get it away from me, it itches. Yeah. And my sister always looks fabulous when she goes to work, and my mother's always like, why can't you dress like your sister, you know?
So what age did it kick in for you?
I think I was maybe a freshman in high school. I guess I would say I was more of a tomboy. I liked to play sports.
Mm-hmm.
I had two brothers, so I played sports. I loved football, all of those type of things. And when I started my freshman year, I remember my mom took me shopping for my first pair of heels and my first pair of pantyhose, and I didn't like either. And, you know, it was a little ongoing, you know, push and pull with us, because I said they itched. She said they didn't. I just was being fussy. And I learned to like them, but like today I don't wear them at all.
No. See, she had the itch too, I'm telling you.
It was like, who said that I had to wear this type of stuff in order to be a girl?
Right.
I mean, I knew everything about me was a girl. I knew it was a girl, but I wasn't into the whole, my hair has to be a certain way. I didn't wear makeup until I was maybe 30.
Wow.
And so it was, I think around then, that's when it started. You know, you wear dresses, high heels, and it was uncomfortable. They messed up my feet, but it's what you do as you start becoming a little lady. Those are the things you do as you become a little girl, and that's the mold that you try to fit into. That's how you have to dress. And I have a daughter. She hates dresses,
mm-hmm.
So I just don't make her wear them.
Well,
yeah. She'll come into whatever she is on her own, and whatever that is for her. Right now she's at jeans, and she just left sneakers and just started wearing a little type of a shoe, but it's happening on her own.
How old is she?
She's actually 17.
Oh, okay. Well, from your perspective, the things you're talking about, what do you make of the situation down in Texas with that whole, cult down there, whatever they want to call it, where they were basically living almost like a little sub society over there, where the women they couldn't cut their hair, and they look like pilgrims from the 1800s, and just overtly different than everyone else around them. Didn't have any connection to the mainstream. So, in terms of the self-esteem issues, things like that, how do you see just the whole subcultural kind of like landscape where you have a hip-hop culture and you have all these different basically kind of little side roads that any individual can go down in order to fit in, and it profoundly influences the way they look out on the outside. But how do you deal with the impact of those things on the inside? Things like religion, extreme stuff that they might get exposed to that's going to stick when they're young because they want to belong. So do you guys ever deal with someone in their 20s and 30s that has come through, you know, maybe they dipped into gangs, maybe they dipped into, you know, some other things that were taking them down a road that led them to your door?
Yeah, well, okay, like we had a young lady who, late 20s, and dressed very, very provocatively.
Mm-hmm.
And in the corporate world, it was causing a problem where she wasn't taken seriously, and she didn't understand why. But then the other side of her was she was trying to attract, you know, attention from the male population, and she felt that was the only way she could do it. But then it was affecting her professionally. So, we, you know, why do you feel you have to dress like this? Because she was more caught up at her age into the hip-hop culture,
which treat women, you know, horribly.
Yeah, so she felt, you know, that was the way, that seemed to be what attracted men, and that's how she chose to dress, but she brought it into the workplace, which it wasn't acceptable there. And, you know, just started having a conversation as to why she felt that was the way she had to dress. And you know, as time progressed, you know, found that she was overweight as a child and was picked on repeatedly because she was overweight. She had been successful in losing weight, and I guess she just didn't know how to handle then having a different type of body. So she didn't dress like that before when she was overweight, but once she got a different type of body, she then moved into the, you know, dressing very provocatively, and this is how I'm going to get attention because I have this different body image now. But
mm-hmm.
she still was having a lot of issues and still wasn't successful in what it was she was going after. And most of what we talk about is just getting to the root of the whole matter, like not dealing with just what's going on the outside. You can spend hours and hours talking to someone about what they're wearing. You could tell them to change
mm-hmm.
their clothes, but it's not going to change whatever's going on in the inside that led them to think they had to dress that way in the first place.
Well,
everybody's
just like the appetite stuff, you know, that happens in takes place as an adolescent. I mean, the women you're talking about are coming in, and they've had the lipo, they've had the stomach stapling, they've had the boob job, they've had the collagen thing in the lips, they've had the cheekbone implants, and then they say, "Trust me," after all that to the guys. You know? So how do you deal with that? I mean, guys don't get. I mean, it's not become rampant anyway on the guy side of the coin. I'm sure it's, you know, trickling through the ethers, but a guy could look like, well, me, frankly, and have absolutely no issue with his physical appearance that they go running to the cosmetic surgeon. But women will go multiple times, you know, almost to the point of having like a small annuity fund going over there to the cosmetic surgeon. And whether it's the, you know, getting their teeth whitened or whatever, there's such a strong wind on that side of the gender coin to look a certain way. At almost every age, I mean, even Barbara Walters is up there pulling her face back behind her neck there to try and look good. Looks like a raisin with a bowling ball inside. And it's one of these things where I, as a guy, I never understand the amount of time and effort women spend literally, they say it's makeup, literally putting on a mask, whether it's on their face or body, in order to impress someone who isn't there.
Uh-huh.
Someone who's in their head. I just as a self-esteem issue, how much of your time do you spend talking about things like appearance and physical stuff and how big your boobs are supposed to be and, you know, should you get this lipoed? And is that a big topic in your circle?
That's a very big topic.
Especially, you know.
It's a very big topic. A lot of women, I don't know, everyone feels, a lot of people just feel like there's this perfect body image, and if you look like this, this is when you've reached perfection and your life is just going to be absolutely great. But you see from, you know, countless examples, whether it's in Hollywood, there's lots of people who have a perfect body, but they suffer in other areas of their life
uh-huh.
or they're falling short. But still that myth is out there that all you have to do to achieve this, I mean, you can have every other accomplishment in the world, but they still chase after this. And I mean, it's everywhere. It's in your face, you know, the Botox, I mean, the Bowflex body. You know, I'm going to look like this as a grandmother. I can't believe I'm the grandmother and I have a body like this. And then you think, oh, maybe I should look like that, you know, being a grandmother. I don't. And it's just this whole big thing that everyone's chasing this perfect body image. And I see it a lot with a lot of the women who want, you know, are thinking about pursuing, you know, some type of alternative surgery. I'm gonna try this, lipo, everything, and as if that's going to magically make their life better. And what we discuss is getting to the root of why you feel you need to do that. Because changing the physical is not going to necessarily change your emotional, social, and any other aspect of your life if you don't address whatever negative mm-hmm. issues you have. So, but it's that's constantly a thing where everyone wants to fix up the outside.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but think about it. The payoffs are obvious, right? The pretty girl gets the most attention. She's going to get the most leeway from the dudes that are going to give them jobs, things like that, or give them, you know, be their spouse. So it's sort of a forked tongue that the women speak with here, where, oh, don't worry about all that superficial garbage. You know, they'll judge you by your inner being, and then you see, I don't think so. You know, oh, she's got a great blind date. She's got a great personality. You're already thinking, oh, geez. And the thing is, women don't have any, it seems like, any protocol, strategy, or otherwise to develop themselves on the inside because there's so much time spent. It seems like the first 35 years of your life is spent making sure the outside looks good enough to qualify for all the benefits that life can offer you, whether it's your job or relationships or whatever. And you're all fighting each other. You know, do you ever see the whole scene with the women in the bathroom at the clubs, and they're all fighting for mirror space and elbowing each other out? And it's like, it just seems like there's an upstairs downstairs kind of a mentality where on the surface it seems like the superficial always wins, and then when you kind of deal with the women who have come through all this stuff, when they start to own their soul and own their deeper parts of their personality and things like that, then that stuff becomes secondary. And I don't think they can believe it or even hear it until they've gone through that that particular personal evolution themselves. So how can you set women up other than to tell them, hey, you got to come in here and get to the root of this? Because they don't want to get to the root. They want to get to the fruit. They want to get to the other end of the tree, where all the money is and all the glory and all the attention is. I mean, when you watch American Idol, we were just talking about before you got on the show here, there's this unquenchable pursuit for attention that goes on in the culture, and women will do anything and everything. You watch some of these reality shows, some of these dating shows, I just thought of Dance Off, Pants Off just now, actually.
Oh, God.
Now, there's a show. You ever watch that show, Karen?
No, I never heard of that one.
You have to catch that just for 10 minutes once.
Yeah. Go to YouTube and just put Dance Off, Pants Off and just watch the pageantry of a bunch of mostly women. Sometimes there's some dudes on it. Basically dancing in their undergarments for the amusement of the masses. And this is, we've become sort of this, almost kind of like, one big frat party, that goes on out there. And especially when you deal with things like Girls Gone Wild, things like that. Where women just are perpetually just told to just take their tops off all day long. And how could they have self-respect, let alone a self-image, when their entire focus on getting attention is how they look and how they compare to other women? I mean, guys don't have, you don't see guys walking around, hey, Guys Gone Wild. We're the ones, beer-guzzling morons getting you women to do these things.
I wonder how much of it is just built in evolution stuff if they haven't reproduced yet,
we can go there.
I
think there's no caveman out there with a camera going, okay.
Well, yeah. And as far as the guys, come to my gym. I have the
That's what I was going to say.
I have the least vile gym in the world. It is not a pickup place in the least, but if you listen to the guys and watch what they're doing the same thing. They're just not really talking about it.
Yeah, believe me, there's not one guy in the world that turns to another guy in the locker room and says, do I look fat in this?
No, but they turn to us girls and say, did I gain any weight since last time you saw me? Because I get that in the gym a lot.
Well, you're in a middle-aged gym. You don't have anyone in there a guy's ego peaks at about 7. And then, the first time they get hit in the nose in Little League, it starts going down, down, down. And they spend the rest of their time building up a shell, until some wonderful lady like you comes along and takes the shell and says, you don't need that anymore. But it's a completely different path as far as the way we're conditioned to think about ourselves and the way we're driven by external success, not the way we appear or the way we act. It's any way we get from A to B makes us okay with ourselves.
You ever
see
those sitcoms?
Our achievement is completely out in the world. What?
There's this rash of sitcoms where it's the funny fat guy with the skinny, perfect, beautiful wife.
Yeah, the guy's dumpy and stupid. Yeah, we're along for the ride most of the time.
There's the message, you know, for women that the guys can look however, and the women
uh-huh.
have to look this way.
Yeah, the guys don't have any attachment to that because they don't. First of all, there's no demand for them to look that way. There's no modeling jobs and things like that for a wide audience of guys that we're really interested in. We actually pride ourselves in being average Joes because that's the 5-0 way: is mow the lawn, take out the garbage, clean the. We're kind of utility vehicles. We're not meant to be prissy and be sort of like preening about ourselves because our entire focus is on taking care of the world and creating a surroundings where everything can happen on the inside. With a woman, everything is about attracting to them personally. And nothing about the inside, everything about the outside. So the guy has to do a different little woggle dance to get the culture to pay attention to them. And I think that's why you have a lot of guys in their late 40s, I'm not there yet, but that go back and question that. And then they have, because of course, as women go through menopause, men go through andropause. Can't wait for that to kick in. We get cold flashes instead of hot flashes, actually. And so what happens is that we become much more in touch with our nurturing side, but because the culture doesn't really have any place to put it, what do dudes do? They go out and find a pixie, 20-something cheerleader to nurture. So we're screwed up, too. I mean, believe me, there's not the definition of man is defective human, I think, in terms of, because we're so built for short-term, low-leverage solutions. Well, women have to kind of, you almost have to stay in the same emotional state from 12 to 45, and then you can kind of go, okay, now I can be a whole human being again because of this propensity in the culture to look young, act young, feel young, be young, and never mature on the inside. And then if you do mature, then it's held against you. You're kind of weeded out by the rest of the pack, as you said before. You get the B word, you get some other words, and you're sort of looked at as being almost like an alpha female in a way, like you're going against the tide. So how do you get all this stuff to work, the assertiveness stuff, the baggage that come to the plate? How do you get this all to work? Is it weekend programs? Is it monthly? How do you guys work it?
No, it's usually a 2-day. It could be 1 day, which is all day. It could be 2-day. The coaching is done over a period of time. That's pretty much ongoing. It could be lifelong. It could be 6 months, 4 months, however long it takes. It depends on what the actual situation is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even like what you were saying, like I'm just thinking, like guys are, they're more like they fix things. They offer solutions. Just thinking about my own experience, that's where guys seem to get their sense of self from, if they're able to fix something, nurture something. And I just think it's funny because then as women start discovering themselves and maybe becoming a little more assertive, it almost causes like a clash where you were saying a guy goes out and gets a pixie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now you got the cougars, though. The women are going, the cougars are out there. The cougars.
Yeah, because then it's just, now it's like if she doesn't need that type of coddling and taking care of, now it's, he's almost at a loss. So now
mm-hmm.
he goes out and searches someone else that he can take care of. And it causes this crazy.
I'm telling you, we're set up for disaster because when you get above 45 and the adolescent, kind of Jones has been hopefully satiated by then, and you're not trying to look a certain way or act a certain way, you're basically answering to your own standards. What happens in the second half of your life is that you have to start thinking about someone else besides you. And that's where I think the big riddle is that the focus on self-image and self-esteem and self-identity becomes so singular and so obsessive that you spend half your life trying to become something that someone else told you to be, and then you're standing there at 53 years old, you don't know who the hell you are, and then your job at that point in your life, in terms of the way your stages of life go, is to start to serve your community, start to serve a bigger picture, and you don't have one spiritual, merit badge at that point, and that's when I think a lot of people get severely depressed and they get almost at existential crisis because they've sort of put not only the cart before the horse, but the cart and the horse aren't even on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing this at 25, 30 years old with these people, that's going to get you know, a lot of the bugs off the windshield for the short term. But do you see yourself stretching this program out and maybe making it, like you say, it's a lifelong coaching program, and putting together programs that fit, you know, like an Erickson thing where there's a stages thing where you, at each age or each every 10 years you're sort of working on a particular life question and guiding them through a process so they understand that the answer to the question they just got is going to be the question for the next stage. And so there's some sense of not just sort of just kind of breaking free of the shackles, but actually living a life of freedom and meaning rather than just trying to aspire to it for 50, 60 years.
That's actually a pretty good thought. I mean, I do write, mm-hmm. so that's actually something that maybe I could consider actually putting into book form.
Hey.
Type of guide. That's actually, thank you.
I'm available for ghostwriting. I'm only writing about 12 different things here, but I guess, like I said, that I think, and we'll wrap up with this question. What is the biggest misconception that you get hit on, you know, from the outside, from the world comes at you and says, okay, I want to do this self-empowerment thing. What is the biggest misconception about the work you do from the women that call up looking for answers?
I think the biggest misconception is that people think that they're going to come. I'm not a problem. I don't fix problems. I can offer people tools to help them mm-hmm. work on their own situations. I don't fix what's wrong with someone else's life. I need someone to help me with my own life.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest misconception is that they're going to come. It's going to be an easy fix. I don't think most women realize. They think more on the surface level. It's going to be, just tell me something I can do real quick, and I'll address this, and it's over.
Don't we know that story?
I don't think they realize that they're going to dig really deep, and they're actually, sometimes people come thinking that it's, tell me how to deal with someone else because they have the problem, and as they start digging, it's more than what they thought, or it's forcing them to focus on themselves as a solution or whatever is going on in their lives. And sometimes people shy away from it, or they quit because it's forcing them to look at themselves, and that's hard. That's harder than, you know, looking at just something on the surface, is to look inside yourself and really see where you've attributed to some of the, you know, unhealthiness of your life. So that's what I think is the biggest misconception, that it's going to be something that's easy, like an easy
mm-hmm.
fix. It's more of a lifelong learning thing, and that's what I think a lot of people don't realize coming in.
Uh-huh.
Well, like
and
I said,
not like
you,
just hype.
Yeah, and this is a hygiene that, you know, that doesn't have, you know, 4 to 5 dentists surveyed. There's not a lot of external support for what they're trying to do. There's a lot of actual resistance and denial out there that's going to tell them, hey, you know, just, you know, suck a water pill and lose 10 pounds and look good in your dress and everything's going to be fine, Mary. And then, of course, Mary ends up, you know, getting addicted to, you know, the water pills and whatever. And she's, you know, 2 minutes later, she's doing a Trim Spot commercial and she's found dead, you know.
Uh-huh.
So there's like this, I mean, you know, I just, you know, we always prattle on about Brittany around here a lot. And she just rear-ended some car the other day. And, you know, it's like people are not going to be satisfied with whatever it is that you achieve in terms of your cultural, you know, status, because they don't know who you are on the inside. And I think women are told that doesn't matter from an early age. It doesn't matter who you are on the inside. It matters how you look on the outside.
How you look on the outside.
Yeah, and that, I don't know when that ends for women. I mean, like I said, you know, there's pride in your appearance, and then there's obsession with it, and you become sort of a shell. And I think that is the biggest misconception that I would see looking at your work from the outside, is that the self-empowerment thing is a service training, is to sort of take all these women and make them into tigers on the inside, but when they have to be sort of lambs on the outside. I don't know how you guys cope with it, Paul, but you've got the 2X chromosomes. You guys got to figure it out, I guess, and then, you know, scribble it on a rock and then throw it at one of us. So. All right, Kat, thanks for joining us here on Naked Soma. Hopefully, you know, we'll have your little page up on the Naked Soma Nation. You can answer questions there and connect to your website, and anything you want to pass along to our audience over there, you're more than welcome to just, you know, let us know about it. And we'd love to have you again, you know, we'll talk about some of these things. Maybe we'll get a dude on to go a little point counterpoint, a little dude empowerment. There's anything like we need them. just call any random guy in the phone book. Hey, I do a dude empowerment thing every day. It's cool. Get out of my damn way. And go back and forth on this thing, because I love talking gender.
That would be fun.
It's sort of a hobby.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks,
Karen.
Right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See ya. Well, she was nice.
Yeah, we got through that without any faux pas.
And you know what? I don't want to jinx us, but we haven't had our usual technical difficulties.
No. There's only 9 minutes to go now. Ryan Church striking out on a pitch that was 2 feet inside.
You know what I could use about now?
Mets down 5-2 in the eighth here, by the way. What?
I could use a little Bill O'Reilly rant.
Yes. Well, we're going to go through it. Now, we have to tell the audience. If you haven't... partaken in the four domains yet, go to somaspace.org. That's somaspace.org. And get your domains on so you know what the heck it is we're talking about. Or you can go to nakedsomination.com. There's a link there about the four domains. And basically, as you go through, we should probably go through them in the order of that they appear in the brain. So do the phyla one first. First year of life, you are a phyla, which means you must bond. So your entire subjective orientation is to be able to connect with other people. All you care about is the people. So here's a philo rant from Bob Costas that we played before, but just listen to the way this man wrestles with these words. He's reading them. It's not even his own words. Go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
Philo Bob.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's douchebag.
Okay. Can he sound more uncomfortable?
He was so uncomfortable.
Contrast that to Bill O'Reilly, as seen on YouTube all this week, having a complete onto meltdown the second year of life when it's all about you.
Oh,
screw the people.
Here we go.
Okay.
That's tomorrow. And that is it for us today. Okay, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's not right on a teleprompter. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
No, there it is. We are going to do Sting, yeah.
Okay, but... Okay. Now, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
Okay. Sure.
There's no words there to play us out. What does that mean, to play us out?
It's Sting is going to do... It's a video. Sting video.
It's poor.
What is
for credit?
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, go, go.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. And we will leave you with a... I can't do it.
Okay.
We'll do it live.
Okay. No.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
Okay, that was the stark difference from Bob. And
yeah.
Then this week we were blessed with Sue Simmons.
Oh, poor Sue.
Having a bit of a faux pas in the Ecoland, the emotional brain, the other night on WNBC.
Yeah, here's the eco issue here.
Watch the change in voice tones.
At 11, pay more at the grocer, but getting less will tell you how to get the most. The fuck are you doing?
I could see us doing that.
That's basically what an eco is. It's like, okay, we're doing this, and all of a sudden, like, what's over there? Play that one again. That's just too much. That is killer.
So that's it. So far, we have the philo, the onto, and the eco.
Yeah, play the eco again. I just got to hear that again.
Oh,
that is just, that
God.
Is so funny.
Let me see if I can turn it up a little bit. Okay,
all
let's
right.
try. See if I can get this thing done
here. Simmons, WNBC.
Hold on. Here we go.
At 11, pay more at the grocer, but getting less will tell you how to get the most. The fuck are you doing?
Just leaned over and bit someone's head off. Oh, that's
and she
perfect.
Was kidding around, from what I understand from the show that I watched today. That's her sarcastic kind of sense of humor, and
uh-huh.
she was just kind of being silly. But, of course, she got caught.
She did go. Of course. The third rail? Let me look that.
That's
okay,
right.
Then wrapping it up, we have our exo. That just takes the cake.
How does an exo have an F-bomb tirade? Would everyone like to hear?
Leaving a voicemail, no less, when there's not even anyone to interact with. Listen to the dulcet tones of our good friend, Brother George.
Here we go.
Hey, Mark. I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I'm completely fucked. Crow will not allow me to say anything again on my gigabytes of drive. It says, I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I tried to cut the pole in half. It says, I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I'm fucked. This thing is fucking me. I'm tired of being fucked. It's Harvard graphics from now on. I will never touch this piece of shit again. It has done this before. I am tired of this. It's fucking unstable. I can't handle this piece of shit anymore. I don't know what to do. I am fucked. I'm fucked for more than you could possibly. It's not fucking funny. And right, I haven't got this goddamn thing done all goddamn day. Because I can't see this thing on a goddamn fucking disc. Anyway, I have no idea if we even have a talk tomorrow. Goodbye.
Okay, do you notice the similarities between the Onto and the Exo when they lose it? Oh my God. Is it any wonder that they have a little scissor G between them? I can't get over that. The lane right next to Bill O'Reilly is George traveling along. Oh, that is just amazing. Oh boy! So there you go. There's all four domains throwing F bombs in every direction.
Oh, they were good.
And you could see, we'll definitely make a post out of this and stick it over there and make it some nation so you can enjoy and weigh in, because the next time you throw that bomb, you would like to know which domain it came from.
Yes.
And that might be a way to track yourself in your scatological little profile of yourself there.
That's
because
right.
If you're uncomfortable saying it, are you uncomfortable hearing it? Because believe me, if Bill O'Reilly is on the distributing end of any F-bomb coming at me, that's going to be a bonk in the nose. But the poor eco that was working for him there was just absolutely, I swear to God, if you could just imagine this guy's face, he has had his jaw on the ground. I cannot believe what a douche this guy is. You douche. But then you got Costas here. I can't get over this.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's douchebag.
It's so soft in tone.
He's almost apologizing it as he's saying.
He can't do it.
Yeah, it's perfect.
He should take some lessons from us because, you know, as ethos, we can get our Onto on, at least in this
area.
We have it.
It's riding shotgun right next at any point. It can just lurch forward like a rabid pit bull and then go back to its merry way of forgetting what it just did.
Yes, actually.
Unique behavior.
All
right, so next week we're going to get our Coherence Jones on. We're going to have our dude over there from Coherence. That was Coherence.org or Coherence.com. I forget the name.
I have to look. I don't know. I'm Eco.
It's on. That's right. It's on the homepage there. We'll have it up there next week. So next Wednesday night, we're talking Coherence, because I really am tired of being told. I'm talking about Bill here. I'm really tired of all you safe spots. I don't know what Coherence is. Yes, you do. When the cop asks you if you're coherent, you figure that out, don't you, Sapes?
Oh.
That's right. So we'll be talking about that, a little breathing, a little heart stuff, and we'll get into that deal. And then 2 weeks from now, we have a big, important guest on, all the way from San Diego. Richard Jorgensen's going to be talking to you about the end of the Internet and other things. So we have that going on. So I'm going to play us out here this week with my good friend Neil Young, Eco. With the song that I had my teeth fixed this week.
That's good. And while you're doing that, I'm going to shout out to my chat friend there, Jim. Stop annoying me about country music. It sucks, okay? All right, go ahead.
All right, then.
We'll be listening to the replay.
So with that message, we'll bid you adieu. Travel light through the darkness. Thank you very much for this time and your space. Be yourselves and be well.
And be well.
Here we go.
That great bronze eagle, son's voice was loud and clear. He said, the stars are working at the right house. The paralyzed are escaped with fear. Was it golden moment in the history of TV news? No one could explain it. You just got great reviews.